Hi, Calvin.
Hello, Otto.
I'd like to ask you something. You've made all these images and these books and everything available to everybody, including the templates, which are basically your starting point where everything fell in place, quite literally. Let's call the whole universe fell in place for you. And I'd like to ask you if you could just talk me through it and basically talk everybody through it. In the use of these templates, you have a series of them called N1 to N8. And as you said, from then on, it's basically a cut and paste. Could you just describe how you did it?
For sure, Otto. Well, in essence, as we've touched on before in the discussions, and as you'll no doubt become more familiar with as you read and develop an understanding of tetrionic theory itself, the entire universe, and this includes mass, matter, all the particles, the fields of force that we rewrite mathematical equations about, all are made up of little units of energy, or energy momenta precisely, which most people in physics are familiar with as Planck's constant. They're the quantum of action, or the ability to do some work in a given region of space. When I first developed tetrionic theory and got the inklings of this equilateral energy creating squared numbers in physics, it quickly became apparent that symmetry played a large role, and more importantly, that because these little quanta of energy, Planck's constants or Planck's quanta, could be drawn on pieces of paper, as I was doing, we could then color code them for certain features, and we could use them, or I could develop a stock template. Now, in the template energy template PDF, I've spent, well, it's the end result of 5 years worth of fiddling with the designs, the color schemes, and how all the relationships work. But that template contains the 8 basic energy levels N1 through to N8, which are squared, as they term it in the mathematics, but in fact they're all equilateral geometries. Now, tetrionic theory distinguishes between mass and matter in physics through the geometry of this of Planck's constant. Planck's constant itself is just an equilateral triangle with an electric field in it, which is a diamond shape, and two smaller magnetic or equilateral magnetic fields, a north and a south. The north and the south arrangement of north-south or south-north determines whether it is a positive or a negative charge on either side of the Planck's constant. Now, the best, as I'm talking this through, obviously, it will be best for people to download the template and print out a page or at least view it on the screen in front of them. But what they'll quickly find is the templates are there to allow you to quickly print out a page, cut out the charged Planck quanta, and then begin building not only smaller particles like tetrions, but larger ones that build like the electrons, the quarks, the protons and neutrons themselves, and eventually you can use the full range of N1 to 8 to build complete 3D paper models of every known element. And there's 120 periodic elements that can be built. It takes quite a bit because, for example, to build one tetrion, you need 4 Planck quanta as a minimum. To build a proton, you need 36 Planck quanta. Form all the sides, you have basically form 9 tetrions, each with 4 sides, and join them all together in a specific way. And this is where the templates really come into their own. They're color-coded for the positive charge fields and for the negative charge electric fields, as well as being color-coded for light blue for south magnetic poles and light green for the north magnetic poles. The strong force, which a lot of people probably at this stage of physics would have heard about, is basically once you've built a tetrahedral and you go to place them side by side to bond so that they can form larger and larger elements or particles, they can only go together one way. And that one way is where the magnetic poles themselves line up and where the electric fields line up, positive to negative. When the positive and negative electric fields come together between these tetrahedral shapes that you'll join, you'll find that keeps the particles together and allows you to build bigger and bigger particles. The templates on each page, there's two sets for every energy level. There's a charged and a neutral tetrion template. They come about purely because in building the universe, when all the energy was released at once, they were all equilateral quantas of energy, equilateral Planck constants, if you like. An innumerable number of these little triangles were released, and it was purely by the north and south positive and negative charge arrangements on these coins that we formed everything we have today. So one triangle has a positive side. It also, under symmetry, has a negative side to it. So even though we tend to, I tended, particularly myself, when I first started drawing them, not to think about what was on the underneath of what I was viewing as I drew it. If you draw a positive triangle, by the laws of physics, the underside must be a negative. So this one simple geometry of an equilateral triangle of energy momenta has positive and negative charges inherent in it. So the moment it's released, it has got no choice but to start interacting with other positive and negative charges around it to start forming fields of energy, fields of motion, and particles that move within those fields. It's a bit like Hawking said in his most recent book, not the latest one, but the one prior to it. He postulated that perhaps the universe was designed in such a way that once it was started, God had no say in the way it developed, that gravity came about because it just had to come about. The physics and the constants that we observe just had to come about. Tetrionics shows that to be the case. But it also shows that what is making this physics that we observe come about, and the constants that we measure to come about, and the interactions and particles and everything that we observe and feel and take in and can measure, is all created by an equilateral triangle that has positive and negative electric charges and north and south magnetic charges. There are no magnetic monopoles, and there are no exotic features like Higgs fields and things like that, or multiple universes, or 11-dimensional space-time. None of that's required. All you need is a flat sheet of paper, or physics terms, a Euclidean geometry of mass energy, and that will create the entire universe. The momenta, which is what creates the motion in the universe, is simply the square root of these equilateral or squared geometries. So you have a triangle. One triangle will give you positive and negative charges. The simplest three-dimensional object you can build out of triangles is a tetrahedron. And this is where tetrionics itself gathers its name from. It creates a particle called a tetrion. Now, it's not recognized in modern physics as existing, and there's reasons for that that I highlight at the end of my first book, Quantum Mechanics. And the basic reasons are that a tetrion by itself will be present in our current particle accelerator results, but it'll be mistaken for electrons and positrons, because the positive and negative tetrions have a geometry and a mass energy geometry and a charge topology that mimics and is exactly the same, not only mimics but is exactly the same as electrons and positrons. The only way to distinguish them would be that they would appear to have slightly less kinetic energy than what was expected. The flip side of the coin is the heavier ones, which I won't go into why there's heavy ones, but there are heavy ones. They could also be mistaken charge-wise as some of the heavier quarks that are measured in the results when they collide and break up protons and neutrons in the collisions. So in other words, these primordial, or as I call them, tetrions, the quantum of all matter, the tetrahedral-shaped three-dimensional particles that are first formed from two-dimensional mass energy, are the building blocks of all matter in our universe, which if you look at my work in quantum mechanics, you'll see that the electron even is made up of three of these tetrions, and electrons and quarks are actually the same family of particles. The only thing that separates the leptons from the quarks is the arrangement of these charged fascia. In quarks, the positive and negatives of the charges cause the particle to condense into an octahedral shape, whereas in the leptons, they have, because they're made up of all the 12 charges that are all the same, there's a repulsion between these charged fascia, and the lepton cannot collapse into an octahedral shape. It stays as a dodecahedral shape, and it's a completely distinct shape to that of the quark, and it performs a completely distinct function in physics. But all these particles are made from these templates. So one of the biggest things I stress to everyone that takes up tetrionics is to get a hold of these templates, print them out, they're all color-coded, as I said, and sit down with a pair of scissors, cut them into the groups of four, form your positive and your negative tetrahedrons, form the neutral ones, and you'll see further in the quantum mechanics book how the neutral tetrions are actually equivalent to what is currently termed gluons in quantum mechanics. But they play a slightly different role. They're more of they play the role of what an electrical engineer would call a dielectric. They keep the positive and negative charges separate from each other, but because they, as a neutral particle, still have a positive and negative of their own, they still allow these charges to come together. So you can have a situation where two positive tetrions can be joined using a neutral tetrion, and that actually forms an up quark, what's normally seen as a two-thirds positive charge or two-thirds positive elementary charge in modern physics these days, is actually shown to have a charge of plus 8 or two-thirds of an elementary charge, which is actually plus 12 or minus 12, depending whether you're talking protons or neutrons. But it resolves the mystery of why quarks have this partial elementary charge. Modern physics says, well, they can't exist by themselves, so they'll always reform and join together in groups of three to form neutrons and protons. But I can show you the exact topology, and you can make the exact topology of quarks, leptons, and protons, hold them in your hand, and rotate them around. That's what I consider the greatest gift of tetrionics, in that we can take what is described mathematically presently and we can give it a physical reality. You can print out the pages, you can cut out the shapes, you can see where the momentum of the fields is pointing, you can see where the magnetic and electric fields physically sit in each particle, and you can put them together. You can see how by just having a collection, I've got a can, what's called a Milo tin, can of chocolate, large one, 2 kilogram one here, and it's just full of cutout triangles and other models that I've put together where I've got separate tetrions and I've then joined them to make quarks and I've joined them to make leptons and I've put them together to make bigger and bigger models over time. But it's literally a Milo tin that's got hundreds of these templates in it that I can pull out and join together as I please at any time. What you gain out of this is a really enhanced spatial awareness of what happens when you rotate a equilateral triangle. A lot of people say that's very easy to do. A triangle is a triangle. Believe you me, in the first few weeks and months of getting to know tetrionic field theory and modeling these particles and fields, you'll be quite surprised, if not shocked, as to how poor your spatial awareness is of what happens when you do a simple thing as a rotation or a reflection of an equilateral triangle. Some of the results, at first glance, you'll think it's a magic trick. The fields don't change the way you expect them to change. And that's the beauty of it. To model it mathematically would take pages and pages and pages, even knowing what the fields are doing. By having a tangible paper model that you can hold onto and rotate, the fields rotate the way they are forced to, and the end result, your brain then has to be retrained in order to understand what's happening. Over time, it becomes much, much easier. But the initial weeks and months, you'll be quite surprised as to how little you know about how things change with rotation. In physics, it's called chirality of the particles, which comes about by the position of the north and south poles on these fields. That creates the chirality. It's also a partial result of the symmetry, the shape of the equilateral triangle and the position of the electric and magnetic field geometries within that. Bearing in mind you've got two small equilateral magnetic fields in each corner and you've got a diamond shaped electric field taking up the rest or the other half of this equilateral triangle. I often refer to, or you'll see it come up in comments throughout my work, for a long time mathematics or mathematicians have stated that maths is the language of physics. And while I don't disagree with it, and I've alluded previous times how I do see it as a language like Latin that has to be learnt, what I do stress is, in addition to maths being the language of science or physics, geometry is its grammar. You can assign any symbol or any shape that you any symbol particularly, to represent a Planck's constant, H if you like, or C for the speed of light, in order to develop the language like the ABCs in English. However, what sets it apart as a language is the underlying grammar. And in the case of physics, it's equilateral triangles. You'll see it play this role as you rotate and join these fields together. Because while the mathematics is assigned to the shape that was unknown up until tetrionics development, what the geometry of tetrionics does is says, yes, you can do this translation or this rotation or join these fields together. And in some cases, it points out where the mathematics, without the model, has erred, where assumptive errors have crept into math purely because the mathematics itself says this is possible. You can do this translation mathematically, but when you try to do it with a physical model, you find that you can't join those fields together in that particular geometry. It just isn't allowed. There's innumerable changes and corrections to mathematics that are brought about by this geometry as you go through tetrionics. Obviously, the first one being that squared numbers are in fact equilateral geometries. It would be nice to change the term squared numbers, wherever it's mentioned in physics, to equilateral numbers. But I fear that's something that'll have to creep in another generation or so. as they've become more familiar with using these paper templates. And that's where I suggest these paper templates should really be introduced. They should be introduced at the kindergarten or early schooling, early grade schooling, so that the mathematics of what odd numbers look like and the what's equilateral numbers or squared numbers are in reality, how they relate to acceleration, deceleration, magnetic fields and electric fields, how the, so that all that becomes second nature, that children can be immersed in the right geometry to produce the mathematics we know is right from an early age. Because even after a few months, you'll find yourself sitting in front of TV documentaries and reading textbooks that are written for the higher level education right now, where you'll just be constantly shaking your head saying, no, you can't do that, or no, that's not the right wording, I don't like that word because it doesn't represent the reality. Again, you have to realize that the insight that I had that led to Tetrionics allows me to build the universe from the ground up. From this simple triangle with a charge either side, everything is built. Whereas historically, we've looked at the motion of the stars and modeled gravity, and then we've developed quantum mechanics over time. And it's been a journey using mathematics from the top down, based on observations, for the last 300 to 400 years. This change in the last 5 years, where I've used the charged Planck quanta to build it from the bottom up, radically rationalizes and reshapes what we know about the quantum world. And that's about a summary of it for you there, Otto.
It's wonderful. And this, of course, something very practical in that, and we already talked about the possibility of having children in primary school use this. And
sure.
Basically, I would like to ask you to just do a step by step on that. They get the templates, they print them out, they cut and paste them together, and then basically the only thing that they need to understand is how the game rules work. But the game rules are already implied in the plus and minus, the north and the south.
For sure.
So the fundamental idea is that they learn that a plus and a minus connect up, a north and a south connect up, and if that doesn't, if you put the north and the north and the south to the south, then there will be a rotation.
Yeah.
So it, that it they learn about the polarities, the complementarity, which for many people, even in physics, is difficult. They don't see how the mirroring and the left and right spin takes place.
For but sure. You could also ask see the process. You could ask a physicist today what distinguishes, what differentiates, is a better word, a north magnetic field from a south magnetic field. And the only answer they could give you is that they attract or repel each other differently. That there is no definition per se of exactly what is the difference between a north and a south magnetic pole, which leads to the discussion of monopoles and things like that. But to, as you say, we can use these templates so students at a very early age can learn that positive fields attract negative fields, and that's how they go together and things like that. But they can do that without even understanding.
Yeah, exactly. Can we take it from there? What could I tell these children in the school? As a friend of mine, they love the idea of having a go at it. I'd like to give them a description basically on the website so that they can just follow it. Okay, so they find your templates.
Okay. If you were to
paste them,
yeah.
Let's start with finding the templates. So there is the N1 to N8 series.
And they're all identical. N1 is the same as N8 and N2 and all the numbers between. The only thing that changes in physics terms is just how much energy is in that triangle. But that's another discussion.
Represented by the color.
And that's represented by the color. So we follow the colors of the rainbow. So N1 is the first one. It would be a red. If there were, in fact, four triangles inside each triangle, four being a squared number and an equilateral geometry, it would be an orange instead of a red that you would see. And you see that in the third and fourth pages. That, in fact, as you move through the book for printing it out, they go to orange, then yellow, then green, then aqua, then blue. You'll note that I've included aqua, which isn't in the normal statement of spectral colors, but it's there for a reason to make it a lot more visually understandable as you do larger models. But when they had this book, if they print the first two pages out, they'll have everything they need to build basic models. And they can do it one of two ways. And this is the way I suggest. I would suggest that you just print out those first two pages where you have the triangles. Let them cut the triangles out. Whether they choose to cut them out in groups of four for easy folding, or whether they cut them out into individual triangles with the red, green, and blue in each one, is leave that entirely up to the student. They can play around with this and learn. If they cut it out, for example, so into all triangles where those slight gaps are, they just run their scissors through it and you'll end up with a whole pile of triangles. I would then encourage them to just put them together without explaining pluses and minuses or what the squiggles are on those things, just by color. And by color alone, you'll find that they quickly start putting green to blue, as you see it on the page initially, but they'll start forming shapes. I remember doing similar ones that taught symmetry when I was in early grade school, where they had one shape and you had to put the blocks and make the mirror image shape on the other side. Similar sort of exercise, bearing in mind that with these two pages of templates, you can make literally every element and every magnetic field of force in the universe. So let the mind wander. You can put them together in innumerable ways, but let's say we were seeking to make the foundation of matter. As the sheet is flat with all these flat triangles, that's what I term a planar geometry, what Euclid would have termed an equilateral triangle. It's flat, it has no height, there's no z component, as they say in physics. It's sitting flat on the desk. So it's just a planar geometry, or it's a mass energy geometry, as I term it in my work. So what we want to create using all these little triangles of mass energy is we want to try and make the very building block of all matter. What gives us substance on the tables and chairs that we sit on? What gives us the ability to feel our fingertips? What makes us, us as matter? That's the tetrahedron. Now you can see already in those templates that they're already organized into groups that can be cut into four instead of individual triangles. You could cut them so that they're left as four, that are four triangles in one larger triangle. If you were to do that, you could then fold it along the central triangle, just fold the edges, and those outer three triangles will fold up and meet at one point at the tip of the tetrahedron. So basically you're cutting out four triangles as one larger triangle, and then you're simply folding it.
Yep.
And this is exactly what's happening at physics in the Large Hadron Collider, for example, when you create a particle. The energy, all these flat triangles, come together and they just bump into each other like two aeroplanes flying at each other. They get attracted and they fold up. When they fold up, they form these tetrahedron. Now, you have three possibilities that can be made using those two pages of triangles. You can have a negative tetrahedron, you can have a positive tetrahedron, or a neutral. Because there's four triangles making up the tetrahedron, the positives come about when you have four positive or triangles forming. The negatives come about when you have four negative triangles joining, and the neutrals, which there'll always be twice as many of, or twice as many more likely to be produced, come about where you have two positive and two negative in the same, coming together to form the same tetrahedron. And that's why you have the neutral templates on the second page, so that you can make positive, negative, and neutral tetrions. Once you have them made, and the colouring again marked with the pluses and the minuses to make it easier for people to quickly pick it up. Once you have them, the rest of physics is literally a case of plus being attracted to negative to make something larger, and two pluses will repel, two negatives will repel. But so long as you, anywhere where you have a plus and a minus edge or face, they will be attracted to join together. And that just, it's just a Lego set from that point onwards. You bring two tetrions together, put a bit of sticky tape to hold them together. So long as those pluses and minuses are where they join up, when you join, you build your tetrions, groups of three tetrions, which is the next stage, three of them will always come together to form quarks and leptons. Leptons is the name given for electrons and positrons, neutrinos, particles like that. Neutrinos are just three neutral tetrions. The electrons are three negative tetrions, and positrons are three positive tetrions. So then you make your quarks. Yeah. Yes?
Can I just take it back a bit? I know that for you it's all about how you connected it to your starting point of physics. I'd like to reconnect it to people in primary school, maybe even kindergarten. For them, they will discover the leptons and the quarks, but they don't know that those are the names which physicists give them.
For sure. They will discover the shapes.
Exactly. And the shapes are already the consequence of just how the colors match up, how the pluses and minuses connect up. So would they need any further explanation about the use of sticky tape? Because the first law of tetrionics is print. The second law of tetrionics is cut. Third law of tetrionics is paste. Fourth law is essentially that out of that an understanding comes, because you see the patterns, and this is so powerful in what you present. And this is something where I had the notion that basically the children at that level, they don't need any further explanation.
They certainly don't. You could do it this way as a schooling exercise, and this is where you suddenly realize how incredibly powerful tetrionics is as a teaching aid. The first day of school would simply be a case of giving the children the printed sheets and saying, cut them out. Now, whether they choose to cut them out into individual triangles or into groups of four, leave it up to them. I would probably even say cut them out all completely individually and show them, sticky tape them so that they see the one side's negative and one side's positive. The second day of education is simply letting them play, getting them to cut out the groups of four triangles and then folding them to make all these little tetrahedral shapes. So at the end of the second day, they have a desk that's completely covered in plus, minus, and neutral tetrions. So day one was, there's two sides to a triangle. Day two, if we have four triangles, we can make some, all these little pyramids. I hate the word, but we can make pyramids on the desktop, which we then educate them are really called tetrahedral shapes, and they're called tetrions. We don't have to explain what a tetrion is. Or anything like that, just that they have built a thing called a tetrion. They'll have tables covered in these little tetrions, and they will have had a fun day doing just that, nothing more. Day three, they all come to class, and we explain to them that the pluses and minuses like to come together. but you can't join two pluses together or two minuses together. No need to explain the physics. That's the only rules that they need to know. We could even make a specialist set of these templates where the negative ones on the pages that you see there now are actually colored in black, as I do in my textbooks. All right, so you could say the red and black come together, but black and black don't come together, and red don't come together. So they spend another day just sticky taping red and black faces together and seeing what they make. Some of them will make two or three together. Some will put three. They'll see that three of them can be formed to make what we would call a quark, but we don't have to tell them that. But they'll also see that if they repel, they'll make another shape, which is the electron. After a day or two of just joining these tetrahedrons together, they'll have another wide range of particles. Some of them will look like snakes, just like I don't know whether you have them over there, but we used to have little snake toys made out of plastic that we could just hold at one end and it would wave about like a snake at the other end. Some of them will look like that, made up of 9 tetrahedrons in a row. At that stage, we're now into day 4, we could actually begin to teach them basic physics. We could spend the 4th day saying, okay, where you have single pyramids on your desk, they're called tetrions. They are the building blocks of the universe, of matter. Everything you can touch, that is what the universe is made of. We can then say, in groups of 3, okay, Johnny or Mary, who put 3 of these together to get this shape, and hold up the shape of the quark? And people could raise their hand, and you could then say, okay, who had in these shapes 2 positives or 1 negative one? And some will hold their hands up for each answer, and we could then teach them all the possible quarks that can be made. We could also teach them what the leptons look like, as in what electrons and positrons and neutrinos really look like, using those same models they made the day before. You could spend a couple days talking on the shapes and the actual names, and then go back and explain that the red, blue, and green were electric and magnetic fields. And by the end of a week, you could have taught them more about quantum mechanics at the very smallest level of physics than I dare say all university students with their masters have right now. Mm-hmm. So within a week of teaching at first grade level, this is only joining colors together and making shapes, we've had a fun activity that's entertained them for an entire week. At the end of it, they have their own models of atoms, of what a neutrino looks like. Every kid knows of neutrinos and how mystical and ghost-like they are. We can add all these lovely descriptive terms and describe physics in an enjoyable way, where on the next week we could learn into building models of deuterium atoms, of making hydrogen, and we could even have competitions to see if they could build different shapes or different ways of things coming together. So there's a lot of basic physics that can be taught using something that is just as much fun as putting Lego blocks together. And in fact, there's no reason why you couldn't approach Lego and have them make the tetrions out of plastic so that they could be just colored red, black, and blue, and you just have them as stick together blocks instead of having to do the cut and paste. You could then move on to plastic models where they just join them together like we do with chemistry models to make elements and larger molecules. But what it adds to physics is I think personally, maybe I'm biased because I always liked geometric shapes, by adding the geometry and the tactile side of this with color coding, we can teach them about physics without them even being aware. And we can teach them how things come together and how they form in a far more intuitive way by immersing them in the process, making it a fun competition. No pressure on them. They just have the entire day to make as many different shapes as they can and see what comes out. It stimulates their thought processes. It's a fun time. There's no competition. It's just a matter of how you can join these together in different ways. And at the end of it, suddenly they can see that they've made these different particles. They have names, and they're an important part of science. So first couple of weeks in grade one, your child's coming home with a very advanced understanding of physics without even realizing that they've been taught physics. That's what I think the power is. And there'll be other things discovered by children that grow up knowing this and learning it this way that even I haven't discovered. There is no doubt that this is the tip of the iceberg. I've developed this over 5 years. It is simply the beginning of the learning exercise. When a generation grows up from the start of their education, knowing and seeing the quantum universe as I do, they will discover other relationships that I've missed or that I've overlooked. And it will just continue to grow.
It's wonderful, because everything in the universe is based on that. So it automatically gives an understanding of how everything connects, but more important, it also explains how duality and complementarity and opposites are so significant and important, and not to be rejected, but understood, explored.
They can see immediately the difference between an electromagnetic field, which is just flat triangles, and solid matter, which is made up of these pyramids. They have an immediate feel and distinction between mass and matter, which isn't done even at the most advanced physics at present. It's not taught, it's not understood. Well, that's why it's not taught, because it is not understood. We treat everything as energy. It still is energy, but these children growing up will immediately know, like I do, mass is not matter, and the difference between them, why they are different, why it's important that they are separated and kept separate. But their intuitive feel for how to do things will be radically different to the way we teach at the moment. In fact, the very last lesson for the day, at the end of, say it was a two-week course, will be to take some of these tetrions and have the children flatten them. Just put their hand on top and push them down so they become flat triangles again. Fold them out so that they're back in their triangular form. What they've then done is converted matter into energy. And then when they've done that, pulled all their triangles apart, you say, congratulations, you've just done what the star does every day. Every second, it collapses matter and turns it into energy so that we have our sunlight. You've just made sunlight. They then have in their mind an understanding of how the stars work within 1 or 2 weeks of early education, and a whole new way of understanding what a squared number is compared to what their parents were taught.
Yeah.
It's an exciting world for them. It really is.
It's so logical, so simple. With all this in place, for me, it is now very easy to pass this on to the school. Evidently, it will be wonderful when the children can use their cameras and record it while they go. This is a school where the children are responsible right from the start. They create their own classes, they create their own courses, they have a regular rhythm. There are topics which they are invited to look into. This would be one. And then they explore it by themselves, and it turns out that when children follow their curiosity together, learning is very swift. And so when they can record that process by recording it on a video, then of course other children can learn with each other worldwide very quickly.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
So I would also put up on the blackboard or up a poster that learning to count illustration that I gave you originally, where they can then see if they cut up all these triangles separately, they can see that groups of three form larger equilateral triangles. You have one, then you put three triangles underneath it. You have four, which is your squared number, but it's just a larger equilateral geometry. That's an important table for them to be able to have up and have explained to them as they go. The counting's not important while they're building models, but it's an important thing to learn, this how odd numbers form squared numbers. This is something that's been known since the days of Fermat, back in I think it's the 1600s. Fermat's difference of two squares. Complex math not normally taught until high school. You can show that immediately with these simple triangles. You can show the difference of two squares is always an odd number, because it's always odd numbers that add up to make these so-called squared numbers. And if the kids can have that education of the numbering system, along with sitting down and playing and cutting out and building things just based on color, and then being later introduced to the fact that these red and black colors they've been playing with are electric fields, like what you see in electricity, and that the blue and green are magnetic fields, like in magnets, suddenly the understanding of the quantum universe will open right up for them. Of course, part and parcel of this, all this is teaching the teachers as well. They need a bit of education as to how tetrionics works in order to be able to explain it. But as much as I'm loath to say this as well, it's not rocket science. This is simple cut and paste. Any high school teacher, any grade school teacher, should be able to pick this up in a very short time frame. As we've mentioned in other courses, the biggest stumbling block to picking it up quickly is the level of education, the preconceptive inertia that they have to overcome to accept that what they're building here really is protons and neutrons, electrons, neutrinos. All these things really are simple things that you can build with a piece of paper and a pair of scissors, a bit of glue.
Yeah, it's a bit like also what somebody said in the education environment. You have these people who are then, first they learn wolf, and then they learn it's a dog, and finally they learn it's a Labrador golden retriever. And there is this lot of scaffolding in the way of learning, which in your approach drops away right from the start, because you can see that the building is the scaffolding, is the logic, is the mathematics. And I'd like to ask you, while you were working with this, you basically tried to formulate something from your basis of understanding of quantum physics and electromagnetic fields. But you suddenly also saw about the mathematics. You recognized the odds and the evens and the squares, and in a way you realized that it was not about multiplication, but about a pattern of coherence. That if you have a triangle which becomes larger and larger, encompassing more and more triangles, that basically every new level of the triangle, while it grows, turned out to have the number of a square. Were there other parts of mathematics that you saw fall in place, apart from adding, subtraction, multiplication, division? Did you also see integration and differentiation come in place? You already mentioned that the reals and the imaginaries were evident. It would be nice if you could sort of talk about that, because that too is something which people only learn about in university, and in a way that's too late already, because it is so it fundamental, is. Well, so essential.
Yeah, you're right. You also have to remember that, as I mentioned, tetrionics is bottom-up understanding of physics at all levels, whereas what we've been taught to date since Newton, or even right back to the Greeks and Egyptians, is a observational top-down mathematics. It's based on what we've observed and what we can model using these maths. And out of that came classical mathematics, and then came integration calculus and more advanced topics like Riemannian geometry, curved space time, things like that. They were all abstract human inventions trying to describe what was happening, what we observed. What Tetrionics does is it, and I've dedicated an entire book, my fifth ebook, which is Geometrics, I call it. It's the geometry, or the geometrics, sounds crazy, of mathematics. And what I did was I took the mathematics that's currently in use, and what I saw and understood as I developed tetrionic theory, and then put illustrations to it, so that with respect to the maths of physics, I've given clear and concise explanations for why the maths is the way it is, and why we can build mathematical models of the physics. I start with what the Greeks saw, and I go right through, and I include calculus, and it's interesting because, being a top-down view of mathematics, calculus involves curves of acceleration normally, just curved lines of velocity versus time. What happens with tetrionics is that you suddenly realize that the arrows that form, or the infinitesimal rectangles underneath the calculus, the integration side of calculus, is nothing more than a representation of the triangles of energy that we've just been talking about at different amounts. The more triangles you have per second, the more force you can create, because they're, each triangle is Planck's quanta. So in the ebook on mathematics, there's actually a page there, or three pages, but there's one particular page where you print it out and you cut out the triangles for various energy levels, and then you cut lines into, or lines under the curve of acceleration, and these triangles will fit in, and you can see in three dimensions what Newton could only see in two dimensions, and what Einstein only saw in two dimensions. So tetrionics gives you the three dimensions of physics, which we haven't viewed up until now. It gives you an understanding of, as we've touched on, that squared numbers are in fact equilateral geometries. They shouldn't, the word squared is an English word put onto an abstract idea in mathematics, which conjures up the wrong mental map. As children starting with this will quickly pick up, using the learn to count triangle, they will see that squared numbers are nothing more than equilateral geometries. The moment they see squared, they'll think of an equilateral triangle. They'll no longer think of a squared shape or a circular shape even. They will think of triangles. Importantly, they'll see things like acceleration as being odd numbers. If you accelerate something, you add an odd number to the triangle you already have. And there's only that there's a certain sequence. If you have, say, an equilateral squared number of four to start with, you can only accelerate by adding five, because you always already have one and three to make four. It'll probably get, if I go any too further into it, it'll get complex verbally. But they'll see that to accelerate, it's always an odd number. You add an odd number. They'll accordingly see that to decelerate, you simply take away an odd number. So suddenly acceleration has new meaning. Odd numbers are instantly associated with the term acceleration, which has been in use since Newton put it in there back in the 1600s, 1666 or something like that. It's been in place, but it's been a nebulous idea. It's just the additional subtraction of energy. children will now know if it's an odd number, it must look like either an equilateral triangle or it'll be a trapezoidal shape based on an odd number of equilateral triangles in a row. So these things that are nebulous terms in physics at present will no longer be nebulous. Likewise, really abstract ideas like irrational numbers, where they can't be expressed as a fraction, or they transcendental numbers that continue on and on and on, that have no ending, suddenly, instead of being going on forever like pi, have a physical finite geometry. Pi radians in tetrionics is simply the shape, or the area precisely, of an equilateral triangle. The square root, again, the word square being a misleading term, the squared roots of energy, which is linear momentum, are simply the lines that cut through the equilateral triangles to form the height. As in, all children learn base by height, half base by height is the area of the triangle. Well, the height, in this case, becomes associated with linear momentum, the force that's in an object that keeps it moving in a direction. You can then say, you can explain things like vector velocity. The triangle of energy will always point in a certain direction, highlighted with the pink arrows that you see on the templates. That's the linear momentum and the vector velocity are associated to each other through mass. All that's explained in the pictures, the geometries. Whereas up until now, the irrational numbers and the transcendental numbers, the linear momentum and angular momentum, things like that, are just words. Well, to me, they were just words that when I was taught, this is the word we assign to it, this is the symbol we assign to it, and it measures this observed property in physics. Well, now we change all that. We say, draw a line through the center of a triangle, through an equilateral triangle, and you have a vector velocity. It points in a vector direction. It has, the more triangles you have in the main triangle, the more force you will have. Children can take that basic model and instantly understand, if I've got nine triangles, it's going to push harder than if I've got one triangle. It becomes something that's not just numbers. There's an actual geometry, hence the name Geometrics for the book. But all these sort of things get sorted out, and we get into the really, well, what I found really exciting stuff, things like Euler's formula and Euler's identity. Mysterious things that are often described as the most beautiful equation in all of mathematics. Nobody understands why it is the way it is and why it works and what it really represents. At the end of going through quantum mechanics and quantum electrodynamics, it's quite quickly shown in a geometric fashion that Euler's complex formula with pi and I and irrational numbers and exponentials and the square root of -1, which is just an imaginary number, are all shown to have a real physical geometry. And what's more, that entire equation is just a mathematical description of an electromagnetic wave, which is just a pile of plus and minus triangles joined together, lying on the table on a flat surface. So all these terms and properties and abstract characteristics that we have, or descriptors that we have in mathematics, even at the highest level today, can be resolved right back down to simple geometry, including imaginary numbers, including square roots of -1 and numbers like that. They all have a real tangible meaning and a real geometry that we can produce using nothing more than these triangles that we have in the templates.
It's wonderful. the templates are freely available. People will have printers, or they can just project them on the paper and cut them out from there.
In fact, I used black and white ones when I first started. The color and the assignments only came into my model of Tetrionix in the second year. So for a long time, I was using
the
black and white.
Levels of energy and got beyond the polarities, which is fundamental. What you needed to do is basically get down to the essence of the complexities which quantum theory describes. And you have now put it into a model which children can play with on a table, and in a couple of weeks basically grow into that understanding of complexity which basically creates the universe as a whole. It's a bit pompous to say, as they would say in Hollywood, well, thanks on behalf of everybody.
Yes.
That's essentially what
you're
doing. You're making it possible for everybody to now get in touch with that. And I just see that we've been doing exactly an hour's worth of recording. And in that hour, you've explained how everything fits together, how people can do it themselves, and that the best way is to play with it and discover. And when children in school start to do that, well, we can only find out if 3 weeks or 3 months later they intuitively understand quantum theory and can actually start to play with the universe as it really matters. So thank you very much for that. And if it is okay with you, I'd like to ask you to just close off this recording with whatever you would like to put in place.
Not a problem. I mean, like, Otto, the best thing I can say with this is, given these templates to children, even without instruction, I'm confident that within a week of sitting there with no instruction, they will be making models of all the basic particles of physics without even knowing it. And they'll be discovering the basic processes of physics without instruction. So it's just an intuitive way for children to become immersed in physics and mathematics without even realizing it, just having a fun time. And that's what learning should be about.
Yeah, and I know schools who definitely provide that. Thank you very much, Galvin.
You're right.